Welcome to Porter Wright's Antitrust Law Source.
Good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this. This is Jay Levine, your host of the Antitrust Law Source podcast and editor of the Antitrust Law Source blog articles. And I am delighted to be joined by my co-chair of our antitrust group here at Porter Wright, Don Barnes. How you doing, Don?
I'm doing fine, Jay. It's always good to share some thoughts with you.
For people who don't know, Don has literally written the book on antitrust agriculture. There is a book written by him. We also have actually a law review article that came out about a year and a half ago. And so I've been wanting to get Don on a podcast for a while, and thank God we successful. So without any further ado, Don, you've done a lot of work in agriculture over your career. First, I guess, tell everybody, you know, sort of a little bit about yourself and how you even got into this space.
Okay. Well, you've all heard the story about the young lawyer walking down the hall one day, and the senior partner reaches out and invites him into his or her office.
Yep.
That's precisely what happened to me. I was a young lawyer in my first job at a small but growing firm here in D.C. And the senior partner, who had formerly been the chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, one day called me into his
office. Kintner?
Earl Kintner. And Earl was a marvelous guy. He brought me, called me into his office, and I was introduced to the general counsel and CEO of a major national agricultural cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
They had a particular problem. They had received conflicting legal opinions on a certain Kapper-Volstead issue from two different, very prominent Boston law firms.
Huh.
And they were looking for a tiebreaker. So I became the tiebreaker.
You. I assume Earl didn't really have a lot of familiarity with Kapper-Volstead.
No, he didn't. But he was an excellent antitrust lawyer.
Right.
So he got me involved. I did the legwork, so to speak, consulted with Earl. We came up with an opinion, provided it to the client. And as they say, the rest is history.
Huh. Well, okay. Approximately when was this? I know we're going to date you here, but
you are going to date me. This
was I born?
Well, you're reborn.
Okay. We'll go with your dating.
This was approximately in the mid 70s.
So, if this is in the mid 70s, was there a lot of concern in the ag industry about antitrust enforcement?
It happened off and on. If you go back historically, you'll find that there were two Supreme Court, landmark Supreme Court cases involving Sunkist.
Right. Case Swain.
Case Swain and Sunkist Growers versus Winkler and Smith. They were in the late 60s, early 70s. So in that period of time,
right,
interest in the antitrust exemption for agriculture was growing, because there was more activity in the courts and,
right,
and in the regulatory agencies as well. So
right. So because the 60s and 70s were sort of the heyday, that's also when Arnold was the, from Arnold and Porter, that's
right,
when
right,
he was, what was he, the head of DOJ? Or?
Right. He was the attorney general, I believe.
Right. And was very interested in enforcing the antitrust laws vigorously, something that we maybe
right,
seeing now again. Interesting. And I guess the co-ops were under the microscope at some level.
Yeah. And they continued to be, particularly where the Department of Justice, the Antitrust Division, has been involved. The Antitrust Division has always had, and probably rightly so, a strong antipathy toward any antitrust exemption.
Right. Obviously, it makes their jobs harder.
And in particular, they have not spoken kindly about the Kapper-Volstead exemption. There have been various commissions over the years. There was one in 1970. There was one in, I believe, 79, a National Commission for Review of the Antitrust Laws and Procedures, which have all recommended weakening the exemption. Sometimes the government has even supported repealing the exemption.
Okay.
So that trend has continued to the present day.
That's not specific to agriculture. I mean, they don't like the McCarran-Ferguson Act. They don't like any antitrust exemptions that preclude them from enforcing the antitrust laws in any way they deem appropriate.
Right.
But interesting. So you, in the mid-70s, you get called into Earl Kittner's office and you do this legwork and then sort of, okay, that is a research project. How did it snowball into becoming somewhat of a career?
Well, after that experience, Earl Kittner, who really had developed a strong name recognition in the antitrust bar, he was contacted by another cooperative.
Hmm.
And this cooperative was in a different commodity than the first cooperative I dealt with. But this cooperative had grown from a very small operation through mergers and acquisitions. They ended up acquiring about 136 or merging with 136 smaller co-ops from the Gulf of Mexico to the Canadian border.
Okay, so it's no longer small.
No longer small, very large.
Gotcha.
And when they became large, they became a very big target. To make a long story short, antitrust lawsuits began to be filed against this cooperative by various classes. You name a class, mothers, small supermarkets, large supermarkets.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
All kinds of consumer classes. Two states filed their own separate antitrust, and the federal government.
What were they suing about? The roll-up of the mergers or
they wanted practices? They wanted divestiture.
Okay.
The government wanted divestiture.
Right. Okay? Right.
They also, the private suits were seeking damages.
Well, what was the conduct they were alleging to be unlawful?
Predatory conduct. Conduct that the cooperative engaged in to induce some of the mergers.
Oh, like bribery or coercion,
something,
threats?
Something like that.
Gotcha.
In addition, they allegedly engaged in coercive activities involving customers to convince a customer to deal with them and not to deal with a competitor.
Wow.
Which put pressure on the competitor to join the bigger cooperative.
Okay.
Now, the major lawsuit, many of these were settled. There were consent decrees entered into with the state and federal government. The private suits, for the most part, got settled. The main suit went to trial. It was a bench trial. The bench trial lasted a year and 9 months.
Obviously not consecutive days.
Not consecutive days. Ended up with two trips to the Eighth Circuit.
This is your 20-plus year litigation?
This is correct. From start to finish, this case lasted 20 years and 3 months.
Okay, well, that'll give you a lot of experience in that, won't it? It
certainly did.
So it took you from associate to partner to...
Exactly.
Okay, wow. So, and this started when? In the mid-70s?
This started in the mid-70s, after my first encounter in the early 70s.
Ah, okay. So that's where you kind of really cut your teeth.
Exactly.
So just stepping back for a moment, for those in agriculture or even just interested in agriculture, has the practice changed since, let's say, the mid-70s to now, or how has it changed?
It has changed. In certain respects, it's become more sophisticated. And by that, I mean...
That's because I got involved.
That's right. After you got involved, it became more cerebral. But what has changed is the approach to the legal issues involved in the Capra-Volstead exemption, okay?
Okay.
And by that, I mean there are certain issues that are still unresolved.
Right.
And it's an area of the law that has been evolving, if you will, and it still continues to evolve. That's what makes it exciting.
Right.
What is a producer? The Act protects producers, okay? So say to yourself, what is a producer?
Right.
Well, The Supreme Court addressed this issue in United States versus National Broiler Marketing Cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was in
78.
And without getting into all the details, they found that one of the members of that cooperative was not a producer because it didn't own the chickens. It didn't have a grow out facility. It had very little indicia of a farmer. No dirt under their fingernails, so to speak.
Right.
Okay. So that's one of, and that issue is still an open issue. And it comes up. It's come up in contemporary antitrust cases involving cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue is vertical integration. How much vertical integration is too much?
Okay. Where you cease to become a producer and are now a processor.
Okay. And the whole purpose of the Capra-Volstead Act was to give the producer protection from the processor.
Right, right. We're going to talk a lot about that in a moment. But one of the interesting things is, as you know, when I think I did a search for Capra-Volstead and whatever, I mean, it's amazing how many, you know, or how few cases there actually are on it, which, as you said, leaves a lot of open questions and you know, sort of not a lot of definitive answers, but keeps us on our toes. But I mean, have you found that generally in ag, there have been periods of time where there's more interest in antitrust and sometimes there's less interest?
Definitely. There have been definitely swings, if you will.
Right.
In the amount of interest, the amount of litigation that's been instituted involving farmers, co-ops, and it's overall, if you look at a trend, it's grown.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Well, because number one, a lot of these issues are undecided.
Okay.
So for the government and the plaintiff's bar,
everybody thinks they have a shot.
There's a lot to shoot at.
Right.
Okay? And they have been taking their shots. Now, the plaintiff's bar has become very sophisticated. There are some very good plaintiff's lawyers who know a lot about the Capra-Volstead Act and antitrust. And as you know, we've litigated against some of the best. But there's been more and more interest in the private plaintiff's bar involving co-ops and antitrust. There have been more and more lawsuits seeking treble damages, et cetera.
And I guess also, well, the reason there are probably more is because there's, you know, there's more money at stake because the co-ops themselves have become bigger and therefore a bigger target.
That's correct. And that is precisely one of the arguments that the government makes regularly to reduce or circumscribe the effect of the Capra-Volstead Act or even repeal it. The argument is farmers don't need it anymore.
There's right.
These co-ops are so huge now. They're billion-dollar entities. And they don't need this protection anymore. The only problem with that is the numbers don't bear it out.
Right.
If you look at the actual statistics, the people who purchase, the companies that purchase the products from these cooperatives, from the farmer members of these cooperatives, have grown 2, 3, 4 times bigger than the cooperatives themselves.
The relative growth has been
There's been
disproportionate.
Huge consolidation in the retail grocer industry.
Right.
Just a couple of months ago, the Federation of Retail Grocers submitted a petition to the FTC to investigate the concentration in the retail grocery industry. Now, these are the people who buy the farm products from the members of the co-op, okay, through the cooperative. So when people say, well, wait a minute, there's no longer a huge imbalance in bargaining power, that's a bunch of malarkey.
Right, right. Because you may have a billion, $2 billion co-op, but you're facing a $10 trillion, if you will. A little hyperbole there. But yes, but the relative strength is still fairly uneven. So I think the interesting thing is not many people know about the Capra-Volstead Act. Not many people, frankly, care about it. But in a way, it really does affect almost everything we quite literally digest in a given day, because it allows the cooperatives to have a functioning cooperative, which allows people to, frankly, fix prices.
Correct.
And without it, Lord knows our food chain may actually operate. Why don't we hold it here for now? And I think in our next podcast, we're actually going to talk about what the Tapper-Volstead Act is. We've sort of mentioned it a lot, but we haven't explained it, why it came into existence in the first place. I think we've alluded to it.
Right.
And sort of there, and although people talk about the Tapper-Volstead Act, there's really a web of laws that exempt cooperatives and people in the ag from the antitrust laws. It's not just the Tapper-Volstead Act.
Correct.
So just to be precise and let our listeners know, we'll sort of run through what some of those are. But I think this was an excellent introduction. Thank you for joining me today, Don.
My pleasure. Anytime.
And this is Jay Levine, again, the host of Antitrust Law Source. You can reach me at the letter J, Levine, at Porterite.com. I'm Jaylevine on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. Don, how can people reach you? What's your email?
My email is dbarnes@porterite.com.
No Twitter, huh?
No Twitter, no Instagram, no Facebook.
Okay, we've been successful in bringing him to the 21st century, but there's still some more work to do, right?
Kicking and screaming.
Yes. For now, have a great day.
Porter Wright Morrison Arthur LLP offers this content for informational purposes only as a service for our clients and friends. This content is not intended as legal advice for any purpose, and you should not consider it as such. It does not necessarily reflect the views of the firm as to any particular matter or those of its clients. All rights reserved.